Good afternoon. Thank you. Just for my benefit, because I like to know a little bit about who I'm speaking with or to. Do we still have any parents of blind children in the crowd? Thank you. Thank you. I get a little bit misty sometimes when I'm speaking to you guys, so forgive me if I do that. I'm an ordained minister. I have the right to do this. That Bell Academy presentation just kind of broke me up a little bit. Don't stop pushing for Braille for your kids. Just don't. I'm originally from Houston, Texas. I attended public schools, and I'll speak a little bit about that in this presentation. I can't. Those are words I was encouraged not to say when I was growing up. Sometimes I said them anyway. My parents didn't know about the National Federation of the Blind or any other resources to help parents of blind children when I was diagnosed. I was born in 1972. I was a premature infant, and I was diagnosed with retinopathy of prematurity when I was 5 months old. The doctor came out in the waiting room and said to my parents in front of everybody else in the waiting room, "Your child is blind." And then he left and they took me home. My parents were good researchers, and they worked very hard to find some kind of help for themselves and for me. And eventually they found some teachers that were very creative, teachers that knew how to push them and push me. Teachers that knew how to have a positive attitude about what I could do. Teachers who believed that I could go to college and live independently. Teachers who passed those beliefs on to me verbally as well as in practice. I still remember when I used to say, "I can't do this." And my teacher would say, "Yes, you can. You're going to go to college, and you're going to have an apartment, and you're going to get married. Now, get back up there and read your Braille." Or whatever it was she was trying to get me to do. And I would do it. And I would whine about it, but I would do it. Some of my teachers were still in the early stages of getting their certifications. They were still in the early stages of learning the Braille. And I would word on their face. And they would ask me things like, "What's C in Braille?" And I would say, "Dots 1-4, but you didn't write a dot 1-4. You wrote a dot 1-4-5. I would erase their dot 5. I'm here to say that the thing that made the greatest difference to me was their education, not their certification. Mistakes in Braille can be corrected by erasing dots. Mistakes and attitudes stay with a person for many years to come. That's why I want to talk to you about the words "I can't." Eventually, I learned to stop saying "I can't," because most of the people in my life believed that I could, and I can. And I learned to confront people who thought I can't. My Braille teacher and my O&M teacher had great expectations for me, and they continued to insist I can throughout all of my school years. I graduated high school with excellent blind skills and excellent academic skills. They don't make these podiums wide enough. I went to Christian College here in Anderson, Indiana. 1,100 miles away from my parents' home in Houston, Texas. I insisted because I could. I made my parents teach me the rest of my buying skills at home because I believed that if I didn't learn my skills at home, I wouldn't use them at home. They taught me at home. I can was like a flower growing up inside me. The only problem was, it was one flower, and I didn't learn how to deal with an environment where most of the people, probably 90 to 95% of the people, had never been around a blind person. And encountering that kind of environment made I can't take root inside me like a weed. And that I can't weed started to wrap around my I can flower. If anybody has ever grown a garden and picked weeds out of your garden, there's a weed called the vine weed. And it wraps around your flowers and chokes them. And it will kill them if you don't take it out very carefully. And that's what happened to me as a young adult. I can't wrapped around my I can flower, and it choked it. And there were many things that I didn't do as a young adult that I wanted to do. Oh, I tried growing some other flowers. I tried other majors. The thing I didn't do from the start was study biblical languages. So I tried other languages. I thought maybe I could do this. And then I tried education major. I thought maybe I can do this. But I encountered more people who thought I couldn't. And I believed them because I didn't have support. I didn't have a network of blind people, and I didn't have a supportive side of people in my life anymore. So I kept thinking I can't. At the time, I didn't know there was such a thing as Hebrew Braille. I'm not sure if I was just ignorant or if I just wasn't connected to the right people. At the time, I had a friend who told me that the Martians could come and I wouldn't know because I was too busy doing my Spanish homework. So maybe I was just too busy doing Spanish to be aware of Hebrew. And in any case, they say that everything has a season and changes, and millennium change too. And that's when I learned about Hebrew. I was on an email list, and I learned that someone was giving away her Hebrew Bible because she said she didn't need it anymore. And I couldn't imagine not needing a Hebrew Bible. I thought, if I had a Hebrew Bible, I would never, ever give it away because I would keep using it. So I asked her if she would please send it to me. And I got it, and it was in four big boxes. You can't see my arms, but I'm holding my arms out about as big as the biggest box you've ever seen. Yeah, you do need a trailer. So I got these four big boxes, and they each weighed about 40 pounds. Well, I opened one up, and I took a volume out. And I thought, I want to see what this looks like. And I opened it up, and I realized Braille can look like gibberish. I thought, well, this looks like a B and this looks like a D, but what the heck is that BLE sign doing there? The boxes went under the bed. And I thought, well, I'm going to have to find a grammar textbook so I can learn to read this. And I started scouring the web, and then I couldn't find anything, so I put that project on back burner for a while. It took 7 years before I found out where to get a Hebrew grammar. And then I had to do some advocacy. I was in seminary at that time. But my seminary wanted to know if there was some other place that I could take Hebrew. I went home and cried. And then I had to write some letters. And then I had to have some meetings. Eventually, they did take on the task of teaching me Hebrew. I took 2 years of both Hebrew and Greek, and then I did a teaching assistantship in Greek. I graduated seminary with professional distinction in Hebrew. Today, I teach as an adjunct professor at that seminary. That's at Yersin University. What that means is that I teach part-time, and I have recently enrolled in the Doctor of Ministry program so that I can obtain credentials to teach full-time.
All right.
I recently parted with my Hebrew Bible so that someone else could learn Hebrew. Because it's very hard to get a Hebrew Bible in Braille now. The Jewish Bible Institute is no longer producing material in Braille. They produce audio material.
But the Braille Institute is producing audio.
The Braille Institute is producing material and audio. If that seems unusual to you, it's unusual to the rest of us as well. I turned the page and lost my place. I teach both blind and sighted students in my course. My courses are online, and for both my blind and sighted students, as much of what I do is teach technology as it is teaching languages. A lot of my sighted students enroll in my online course because they think it will be convenient. It is convenient. But the problem is they enroll and they've never taken an online course, so they don't know how to use the technology. So they learn how to use the technology that they need to access the course. My blind students enroll in the course and end up needing to learn technology that is necessary for accessing biblical language material. There is a great array of resources now in existence for studying biblical languages that did not exist 10 years ago. This is good news for us, yes, especially 3 years ago, but certainly 10 years ago when I started to study biblical languages. When I studied biblical languages, it was much harder. I had to actually configure the computer to display any Hebrew at all. It was very hard. Once in a while, I still meet a person who prefers or even needs good old hard copy Braille, because sometimes they don't even have the technology of today. So my other job is working as a Braille transcriptionist to put ancient language grammars into Braille. People who need language text in Braille will always have them. What we do on the Semitic Scholars Committee is work to expand the scope of language options available. That means that we are developing code systems for languages that have never been represented in Braille at all. And I'm going to let Matt talk about that. Hopefully I didn't put words in his mouth. We're also working to expand the variety of devices that you can use to do language study in Braille. We want people to be able to do language study with a PC, regardless of what screen reader they use. Right now, we're still recommending JAWS, but we want people to be able to use NVDA or any other screen reader. We also want people to be able to do language study using a Mac or an iOS device. I have taught people on a Mac, but it's very hard. It needs improvement. We also want people to be able to use note takers, if that's their preference. We also want to see improvements in the accessibility of mainstream biblical study software. The mainstream software companies have customers who are blind, and part of what we're doing is working to advocate for the improvements in accessibility that we need. It's a slow, ongoing process because there is some understanding of the need. But some of these software packages are built on platforms that are very difficult to configure with screen readers.
Steal your water, sorry.
I'm not sure how Matt and Ray feel. Ray is from Michigan. He's not with us today. But I'm not sure how they feel about what was going on when we started working together 3 years ago. But I never imagined the opportunities that would arise when we started working together. I'm a person that just responds to things as they come up. If somebody needs something done, I'm happy to do it. But I want to say that because of our work together, I think about that opportunity differently. I think today that there are all kinds of things open to us. I am learning now to think, I came. And that's thanks to my fellow Semitic scholars, thanks to the folks at Duxbury Systems that are working with us, thanks to my colleagues at AU, and thanks to the NFP. And that's all I have to say. Yeah.